Okay, we do have a speaker tonight. They're going to share their experience, stress, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. Their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to hand you over to Helen, who's going to introduce them. So, Helen, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Hélène. I'm an addict. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. So I met this speaker a couple of months ago when I was venturing across the pond to another meeting, and I was really struggling with connecting with my higher power at that time, specific time. And he was doing a main share, and his main share helped me so much that I thought I would ask him to come and share here with us. So with no further ado, Danny, please come and share with us.
Thanks, Helen.
Hey everybody. Hi family. I'm an addict. My name is Danny.
Hi, Danny. Welcome to the
meeting. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Just to qualify, I was an IV user for many years, before a God that I didn't believe in. Grabbed me by the scruff of the collar and brought me to you guys. And he gave you all an instruction manual and said, put this guy back together again. And once you get him reassembled, bring him to me. And that sums up my journey in this thing we call recovery. But I'm a step worker. I believe in the steps. I believe in working the steps and working the steps with the sponsor. And even after so many years clean, I still do step work. And one of the things that I realized is because life happens. Life happens. And life still affects me. It will affect me emotionally. It will affect me mentally. It will affect me spiritually, and sometimes without my knowledge. And what I wanted to share about was just a recent experience of sorts. And it's funny. I was sharing with a friend of mine. He and I've been on this journey together for a long time. And he's got like 39 years. And step work and service work and sponsorship and all that. And he said, after all these years and all of that, I'm still coming to believe. And that's where I am. I'm still coming to believe. What I want to share about is a seventh step. My experience with a seventh step, one of my experiences. And some years ago, I'm gonna say about 12 years ago, I met with a sponsor. He wanted to go over his seventh step. And when he had completed his step, I did a seventh step with him. And it was probably a fifth, sixth, and seventh step with him. Because I've realized I had gotten into a place where I had shut myself off. Now, mind you, I was still going to meetings. I was still seeing people. I was hugging people. I was sponsoring guys. But I had shut myself off emotionally. I would go to meetings and I couldn't wait for the meeting to be over so I could get home. And when I walked through the door of my apartment, it was safe. On the outside, I looked like I was, doing all the things that, good recovering addicts do. I was working. I was, on the surface, but I just wanted to go home. And I did not want to share that space with anyone. Even dating, dating was, if I went out with you on a Friday night and you spent the night on Saturday morning, that cup of coffee, it goes in a styrofoam cup because it's to go. You're not staying. I had friends that would come in from out of town. It's like, hey, I was thinking we could stay with you. It's like, no. I knew, even in the midst of it, I was in the grip of self-centered fear. You see, every disappointment, every heartbreak, every letdown, every failure had just, each one was just putting a brick back into this wall I had built around me emotionally. I knew it wasn't healthy. I knew it wasn't healthy. I knew it was harmful. I knew I needed to change, but I couldn't. The fear was paralyzing, and the comfort of aloneness, I don't know who knew. It had just taken over. And I shared this with the sponsee, and we talked about it. And I said, man, I can't. I want to do different. I want to be different. I just can't change it. This fear has me gripped. And the seventh step is giving it to God and letting it go and trusting for me that I will find some relief. Now, I'm talking about somebody at that time that was, like I said, locked in self-obsession, self-absorbed, in the grip of self-centered fear, and where the idea to get a dog came from escapes me. I'd never owned a dog before. I had no idea what it took to raise a dog, or to care for one. And this idea just get a dog. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get a dog. And I didn't want just any dog. I wanted a big one. I wanted one of those dogs when you come out of the house, everybody, get all the neighbors run inside, And I get this dog. And what ended up happening was I like I said, I had no concept what it was to raise and care for a pet. I didn't. And it did not take long for me to get to my wit's end. I remember one, I can laugh about it now. It wasn't funny then, but I had gotten to the point where I was comfortable. I thought I should have been comfortable enough to leave him outside of his crate while I was at work during the day. And I left him out that morning. And I had this great big white shag rug in my living room. And I came in the house and I opened the door. He had wholly destroyed this rug. I mean, it was just, and he was standing there in the middle of the floor with white strands hanging out of his mouth, looking at me as if he was so proud of himself, like, look what I did. Oh my God. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. This was my home. This was my safe place. And raising a dog was just too goddamn demanding for me. I needed my own space. I needed my own time. I needed control over my world. And this dog was just taking me totally out of pocket. And at the peak of my frustration with this, I was talking to a friend of mine down in North Carolina, and she raised and breeded Malinois. And she said, let me ask you a question. She said, do you know what he does all day while you're at work? And I said, I'm terrified to think of what he could possibly be doing. And she said, all he does all day is wait for you to come home. And I was like, wow. She told me that his world revolved around you, around me. And I was like, oof. But I had just gotten so frustrated. I needed my space back. I needed my time back. And that self-centered thing was just calling me. And finally, I just got to the point that I ended up packing him up and threw him in the car. And I took him to a place called Barks that they people turn dogs in, a place where you can go to rescue dogs. And I took him there. And I went up to the counter, and the young lady, gave me a form to fill out. And he was sitting down next to me while I was standing at the counter. And I started to fill out the paperwork, and I looked down at him, and he gave me this look like, is this what we're doing? Are you really going to do this? And I just looked at him. And it's like, ah. And the lady came back up to me at the counter, and she said, are you finished? And I said, no. I changed my mind. And she laughed. And he and I got back in the car. And I didn't realize what was happening while it was happening. I started scheduling each day around him. After a meeting, it was like, come on, let's go get something to eat. No, y'all, I gotta go get my man. I gotta take him out. I would go out to get something for the house or, go grocery shopping or something like that. And I would see one of the pet stores and I would go, oh, let me look in there and see if I see something to eat. I didn't realize what was happening. We turned into like an old married couple. We fussed with each other. We argued. He'd roll his eyes at me when I tell him to do something he didn't want to do. We'd get on each other's nerves, But my life changed because I had to take care of him. I had to make sure he got walked. I had to make sure he ate. I had to make sure he had time, my time. And I just started doing it. I had not been in a relationship in years. Not what I would consider a healthy relationship. There was a woman that had been in and out of my life for the last couple of years, and she ended up moving in with me about a year ago. And so it was me, the dog, and my girlfriend. And it was difficult because she liked to travel, and for the first time I had experience of having to, well, what am I going to do with the dog, and putting him in a daycare overnight, pay somebody to watch him overnight. And he was a big dog, so it wasn't like it was something easy to do. And eventually, I started thinking about, for the first time, buying a house. And my girlfriend and I, both of us, were excited about it and doing all this stuff. But then something started happening. He started getting sick, and I knew it. And I kept, back and forth to the vet. I knew what it was. I kept hoping that it would get better, but it didn't. I couldn't imagine what my life would be at that point without this dog. And found a house, and it had a yard, because I've been in an apartment, and this house had a yard, and it's like a couple of floors, and I went to closing on February 7th, and by the next day, the dog's illness had progressed to the point that I had to put him down. And it was strange because I was at the closing table and I was sitting down, all the folks involved in the settlement, and I'm signing papers and everything. And at the end of it, the woman says, "Well, congratulations, you're a new homeowner." And this was my actual response. I said, "Yay." Because I couldn't feel it. The dog and his illness and the possibility or the probability of losing him had eclipsed everything. And that next morning, when I made that phone call and made the appointment to take him, to have him put to sleep, when I hung up the phone, I sat in the living room and I cried. My soul cried. I mean, it was a cry from a place and my girlfriend didn't even ask me if I wanted her to go. She just started getting dressed, and we got him in the car. And we took him to the place, and I refused to go in the back and watch them do that. I just couldn't do that. And so I sat down on the floor with him for a while. And the guy just told me, he said, "Just tell me when you're ready." And when I got ready, I handed the guy the leash. And my dog just got up and he walked down the hall with the guy. He didn't buck. He didn't give the guy a hard time. And most interesting, he never turned around and looked. And I looked at my girlfriend. I said, "Did you see that?" She said, "I saw it." I did not realize that this dog was my seventh step. Prophetic thing about it was that when I got him, I wanted to name him something different. So I went online and I said, "Look up Japanese names." And I named him Sensei, which means teacher. And this dog taught me how to love again. This dog taught me how to make someone else's needs more important than my wants. He taught me forgiveness. He taught me patience. And when we got back to the house, I hugged my girlfriend and I told her, I said, "He's left me in your hands." And when he walked down that hall, It was because his job was done. He had done what he was supposed to do in my life. He healed me. He taught me. He made me the man that God wanted me to be. You know what? When we come around here, they tell us to change people, places, and things. And at first, I always believed that it was because we shouldn't be around those people because they'll make us used. But what I realized is that when I change people, places, and things, it opens the door for the people and the places and the things that God needs to put in my life to get me to where He wants me to go. God will assemble the people. He will put these people together to move me, to mold me, not into the person I think I want to be, not to the person I think I am, but to the person that He wants me to be so I can serve His will. And while I'm still sad, I'm still sad. I've moved into this house now, and all the things that come along with moving into a new house. And there isn't a moment that goes by that I don't think about Sensei. I think he was the only dog that actually rolled his eyes when he didn't want to do so. Oh my God. But he was my best friend. He was my best friend. And it was just the perfection in it. When God shows me his face, even in the midst of the pain, I could see the perfection. I needed to heal. I needed to heal. I needed to tear those walls down. I needed to come up out of my self-centeredness and my self-obsession and my self-centered fear. And I didn't know how. And God said, dog. And it was perfect. Even when it wasn't my idea, really. I believe in this program. I believe in this process. I believe in this journey. I believe in you all. Because most days, I honestly believe that you all did a great job in putting this guy back together again. I like the man that I've become. And that's just my experience, one experience with the seven step of Narcotics Anonymous in my life. And I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to share it out loud. And I'm done. Thanks for listening.